Welcome to Stopgap Talks, your go-to podcast for expert insights into the marketing, digital, creative, and research recruitment landscape. With over 30 years of experience, our consultants are here to share the wisdom, strategies, and success stories that can transform your hiring or career journey. If you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review to help others find us. Now let's dive in to the latest episode of Stopgap Talks.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast. I'm Sibylle, one of the principal consultants here at Stopgap, and I'm specializing in the charity and wider not-for-profit sector. With me today is Zoe Amer, and we'll talk about the digital landscape in the charity sector and how to build a successful digital team. We'll also discuss some practical tips, what to consider when you're building and recruiting for a digital team. So Zoe is one of the sector's leading digital experts. She is the founder of Zoe Amer Digital, the leading agency for all things digital in the not-for-profit sector. And she is also the driving force behind the Charity Digital Skills Report, which is the annual barometer of digital skills, attitudes, and behaviors in the charity sector. At Stopgap, we've really enjoyed partnering up with the report this year and helping the charity sector improve their levels of digital skills. So I'm absolutely delighted to that you have the time, Zoe, to join me today and talk through, share your experience and talk through some of the points I've just mentioned.
Thank you so much for having me, Sim. It's been lovely working with you and the team on the report. And thank you to Stopgap for supporting the report this year. And I'm really excited about our conversation today. Thanks for having me.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Zoe, to allow us to set the scene, can you talk us through your key observation with regards to skills and proficiency of digital teams in the charity sector?
Yes, of course. And I think the overall picture that we're seeing with digital skills and progress across the charity sector in this year's report is that charities are progressing with digital, but it's very much despite the enormous stranglehold of the cost of living crisis on the sector and the effect that's having on fundraising and the ability for charities and their digital teams to help their organisations achieve their ambitions. And that progress, which is very much hard won, is really testament to the amazing work of charity digital teams. And I know we're going to talk a lot more today about digital teams and where they go next and upskilling. So just to give you sort of three very quick fire stats in terms of digital. So 3/4 of charities move forward with digital this year, so that's 76%, which I think is testament to the kind of skill base that we do see in charities. There's obviously room for development, and we'll talk more about that. But the fact that digital is a priority for 80% of charities and 50% have a digital strategy, it shows there is that commitment to digital there, and charities are doing as much as they can and really pushing to move forward with a digital agenda despite the many, many challenges they're facing. I think one of the things that may come out as we talk more today is, what are those skills that you need to build around digital skills? And I know that's something you're really interested in, passionate about, Sib. So, you know, that might be to do with the soft skills that you need in terms of how you influence your leadership team and your boards and, you know, how you make the case for getting the right digital infrastructure. So I'm hoping we can look at digital skills in quite a holistic way as part of our discussion today.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. So when you look at because you just said 76% are moving forward with digital, and I think one of the points you mentioned is the cost of living crisis, the budget restraints are very stifling for many organizations. So is budget the biggest challenge for digital, or where do you see the biggest challenge for charities today?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because when I was thinking about the conversation we were going to have today, it really does feel like a multi-dimensional challenge. So yes, absolutely, budget is one part of it. So 68% of the charities that we spoke to as part of our report told us that they were struggling with squeezed organisational finances, which was due to the cost of living crisis. But it's interesting, because I think the way we talk about cost of living crisis is sometimes as if it is a thing, but of course that has a massive ripple effect on everything else that charities are trying to do digitally and otherwise. So as part of the report this year, so two-thirds of charities told us that they are lacking the headspace and the capacity to really think and to plan and to take a step back and consider where they go next with digital. So I think that's one particular challenge. It's the stress and the lack of headspace that's been caused by the cost of living crisis. And then the other thing that's related to that, which very much speaks to the budget point you mentioned, is about funding. So 60% said that the biggest barrier they faced was finding funds to invest in infrastructure, systems and tools. And we know from other data in the report that digital funding is something where there is a huge gap between supply and demand in the sector at the moment as well. So that is an additional challenge, another sort of dimension to this multi-dimensional challenge we're seeing in the way of what's preventing charities from taking their next steps forward in digital transformation.
And because you're working with organisations of all sizes, courses, location, any areas of differentiation here in the UK, can you pinpoint if certain organisations are more affected by this than others? Are there certain pain points that one should be particularly aware of?
So the one thing I would love every charity to consider, whatever size they are, whatever field they operate in, whatever size or cause they represent, is to have an idea of what success looks like for their digital transformation before they start to really motor ahead with it. And the reason why I say that is it's partly because some of the challenges we see through the report, but also day to day, what I see through my day job, the fact that if you don't have that vision for success, that it's so hard to make decisions about who you're going to hire and how to upskill and where you're going to invest your time and your efforts. And so what we saw in the report this year, actually, which kind of speaks to that point, is for the sixth consecutive year, charities said that they wanted their leaders to provide a vision of what digital could help them achieve. And that for me is so critical, because you talked about success factors there. And if you can make sure that your leadership team and your board are really, really behind what you're trying to achieve with digital, and in fact, if they have helped shape that as well, then it's so much easier to plan what you're going to do in the way of your digital transformation, but also to execute it and make sure you've got the right people working on the right things to do it.
It's very interesting. Digital transformation is such a buzzword, isn't it? And my clients and my candidates often talk about it, and there are different interpretation, understanding of what it actually entails, and also how an organization can get ready for the digital transformation and what they need to consider when they want to embark on the digital transformation journey. And I know you are helping your clients on that journey as well. And there may be different stages of the journey. Some organizations may be early on and others may be very proficient too. So if you had to give advice, or if you had, I don't know, a magic one or two points or advice that you would give an organization when it comes to what should we do and how can we be successful on this journey?
So one of the key things that I recommend alongside defining what your vision for success is, and it sounds so obvious, but you would be surprised. There are some organizations out there who still don't do it for whatever reason, is to talk to your audience. So for example, if you're a charity that's very dependent on digital fundraising or indeed any form of fundraising, go and talk to your donors and ask them how they use digital channels, how they use digital services, what other organizations and charities they are interacting with digitally. So that could be that they're following other charities on Facebook or getting their newsletter, or it might be their other not-for-profits where they might be using their digital services, and just asking them what we can learn from them and how your charity compares. So I think that's really, really fundamental. Talk to your audience and find out what their digital wants and needs and behaviours are, and think about how you might need to reshape your digital proposition and offering accordingly. And then bringing it back internally, you want to make sure that your digital goals, so what you're trying to achieve with your digital transformation, really line up with your organizational strategy. So if you're trying to achieve certain things under the organizational strategy, the digital strategy has got to be totally integrated with that and to really support what you're trying to do. And then the other couple of things that I would recommend, and part of this is based on what we see in the report, but also what we see in my day job as well, is remember that it's a long game. It's a long game. Yeah. You need to be ready to invest for the long term, to think about how you can staff up for that as well, and make sure you stay committed to it, because it's one of those things, digital transformation, which, as you'll know in your job, Sibs, is never done. It's continuously improving. It has to keep evolving. And on that note, having a plan for how you might start to tackle emerging tech, particularly artificial intelligence. And obviously we saw that has really grown in its usage in the report this year. I would definitely make that part of improving your digital transformation readiness. And it's really about planning for the future, isn't it? And making sure your charity stays relevant.
And it's very interesting what you say, talking to other charities and colleagues. If an organisation feels they're not really where they should be, they often may shy away to sharing that or wanting to share that, because they don't want to be seen as someone who is not future-proof, someone who isn't looking in all of that. But again, what you're saying, and that's very encouraging, is to say, don't hide, just do speak, do share, do speak, to engage, but also speak to, and I like when you said speak with your stakeholders, internal stakeholders, your donors, your members, your volunteers, to understand more of the world they're in and how they're using different channels. So I think that's something which should be relatively straightforward to do once you decide that you're happy to go out and engage with them. The point that you're making for me brings up, this isn't just a specific strategic skill that someone brings in. This is actually change management as well, isn't it? This is bringing or taking the organization on the journey of change, an ongoing change. And as you said, it won't finish once you have implemented a certain technical system. It's an ongoing change. It's a change management process. And whoever is driving this, and all the people who are driving this, need to be able to bring the relevant stakeholders with them on their journey.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think where I've sometimes seen transformation go wrong previously is if organisations hire a digital team and just plonk it in the middle of the organisation. However good those people are, if you don't have a really solid relationship between that team and the rest of the organisation, that's where it can get really challenging.
Yeah. What about upskilling versus recruiting? Because organizations have existing teams and they may be very good at what they're doing at the moment, and they're aware that things are maybe missing. So how do you bridge that gap? And I know you work with charities on training for digital strategy. You're coaching senior members, particularly to be ready to be able to embrace that change process and to understand the need for strategy and help them with the strategy. But then I think you also do quite hands-on workshops, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. And I really love your question, because that balance between upskilling and also recruiting is so key, actually, because it's like you need the right balance of both of those different things. So what I would suggest about that, and I'd be really interested to hear your experience, you know, when it comes to the recruitment side of things, is I think having a really, really clear purpose and a really clear plan. Yeah. So it's not just digital skills for digital sake. It's really got to be about, it needs to be a business reason, I'd say, for yeah. doing it, and having that very clearly communicated. So we're going to hire these people, or we're going to grow our organization's digital skills so that we can better achieve our strategy by growing our data skills or improving our digital service delivery skills or whatever it might be. And then the second point I'd make about how you get that balance right, and particularly around how you sustain your digital upskilling, is you need to think about, how does this relate to staff's career progression overall? So they've got those incentives there to get involved in the program and see how it's going to benefit them as much as increase the impact of their organization, but also again to have that sponsorship for the program as well. So it's not just a one time only, we'll do it in 2024 and not do it again. But yeah, Sibs, I'd love to hear what you your take is on those issues.
I guess what you said, very much without having the strategy, it's very hard to say what you're really looking for. And that comes often when we are speaking to organizations and they say, well, I need someone who helps us improve our digital footprint. And we say, what does it actually mean? What are you looking for? And that's often a decision making process, or they're still in, sometimes you save their shop as they go along. So it's a process of thinking what we need. Is it the strategic skills? Is it the creative thinking? Is it the technical experience they need? And what's the combination of everything in there? And without having the senior buy-in, whoever comes on board as a digital marketeer may be struggling to fulfill their brief, and also maybe struggling to fulfill what they want to do. So the strategic top-down sign-off and buy-in is so crucial from a recruitment point of view as well. And that when it comes to bigger digital transformation roles, we are usually briefed by senior management. When it comes to more strategic roles, that is often organizations aren't always going to the point and saying, what do we actually need? It's almost like, oh, we need someone to help us be better with our footprint, with our achievements. And candidates, particularly senior candidates, they usually ask, what does success look like? What am I expected to deliver? Because they know they come from a world where, particularly in the digital world, their successes need to be measured, and they often really thrive on the possibility to bring that success.
That's really exciting, isn't it? Because that focus there on people who obviously have great technical skills, but also who are hungry and could potentially really change the culture in your organization and bring in a leader who's a real change agent. That's really exciting, and that must be exciting to see that as well.
It absolutely is, and it's wonderful, because those candidates are often, it's their mission, they're often career freelancers or interim professionals who love coming on board and helping to turn around an organization. So they come on board, they understand where the organization is, they get under the skin, they talk to other relevant parties, they develop that vision and strategy, And then they say, to make this happen, we need to look at, we talk about internal upskilling, we talk about a potential external support like yourself, like an agency you can help with develop further. And they may also say, you know, we may need certain skills that we have to recruit, and that could be on a temporary basis or that's on a permanent basis. And it's wonderful to stay with those appointments when we do them and see what happens and when they then move on and how those organizations have just are able to turn around where they are. And digital, as you said, is integrated. And you can't just take digital out of the entire mix. So it really does affect the entire organization, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And I think the whole organization needs to be aware of that as well. So that when you make those changes, whether you bring someone or a digital team in, or even if you're just upskilling your own team, it really needs to be framed as the start of the journey, not the end of the journey.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And that's an exciting point as well, but it's also can be quite daunting, I think. And particularly if as an organization, you have the challenges, the budget restraints, and you don't have the skills in-house to say, this is where we should go. This is how we can start. These are the type of questions we need to ask, and who aren't able to ask those questions, either because the organization isn't ready to listen or because they may not be in a position that they can ask those questions. So even in those situations, it's really, there's so much that needs to be doing. And it's interesting when you said at the beginning, the skills that are required are by far not just the technical skills, are soft skills, influencing skills, leadership skills. And I think that's where often technical experts can be technical experts, digital experts. Some digital marketeers, they are just whizzes with their different channels, etc. And what digital transformation, from our experience, really needs is a senior manager with a strategic knowledge and outlook. And the digital, and who has digital in his blood through and through, a digital native, but who really is a senior manager rather than a channel expert.
Yeah, I think that's such a good way to look at it, because it's about having that holistic overview of what's going on digitally.
Yeah. And yes, you need the sector experts as well. You may need from the data side through to the web and content and paid performance, social, email, all of those aspects as well. But without bringing it all together and without having the senior leadership, you will not be able to, it will be like a rudderless ship. And then, as you said, it's an ongoing journey, and this leader will continue being at the head of that ongoing journey, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can only take things so far if you don't have that sponsorship around you. I think that's so important. Yeah. Sometimes I say to organizations, you need to make sure you're not inadvertently creating a digital glass ceiling, because if you've only planned ahead to a certain point with your digital transformation, if you see the end goal as something that perhaps isn't as ambitious as it could be, where you think, oh, we're just going to fill these roles or just do our digital skills program once and then that's sufficient. That's the thing. It's about continually challenging your organization, isn't it, to do more with digital, achieve greater impact from digital, whilst also being really careful about the resources that you have as well. And I know that is a big challenge for organizations at the moment.
And when you think, how do you find that pink unicorn? Because that's what it comes down to, isn't it? I'm an amazing person, wonderful to work with, human, engaging, all of that. And I think that's the challenge, isn't it? And as we all know, there's never one magic solution. And it always depends on your circumstances, doesn't it? So when a client asks me, how do we find the best talent? It really does depend on the circumstance. And I would always say, always exploit your own channels, website, social. I would say advertise and talk to supporters, members, volunteers. Invite recommendations from employees as well, because word of mouth is unbeatable when it comes to employer branding, doesn't it? And then there are obviously excellent online recruitment platforms such as LinkedIn. There are job boards like The Guardian, Third Sector, Charity Jobs, etc. But for big roles like this, specialist roles, I think there are two questions an organization should ask themselves before they start the recruitment process. And one is about time. So do you have the resources in the organization to manage the process from taking the brief through to developing the job description, long listing, short listing, managing the interview process, etc.? Because recruitment, particularly for such a specialist role, can be very time intense. And online platforms can generate a very high number of responses in a short period of time. And unfortunately, the quantity of applications doesn't necessarily translate into quality. But because of your employer brand, it's really important to respond and engage with these candidates in a positive way, nevertheless. So that's about time. It can be very time intense. And the second thing is, do you actually have the specialist knowledge to understand what skills and experience you're looking for and what they look like on a CV or on an application form? And are you able to spot and understand, identify skills that are transferable? Skills in the digital world are particularly transferable, and particularly on the senior level, when it comes to digital transformation, a lot of great candidates are sector agnostic. So it is important that ask yourself, are you able to verify these skills and experience as well when you see them on a CV? Because we all know paper can be very patient in that sense. When I said the two questions to ask, one is, do you have the time and do you have the experience? It's worth keeping in mind that a recruitment specialist can help streamline the process and identify the best talent that is available from going through the vast pool of candidates and make recommendation through to digging deep into experience, technical experience, functional experience, cultural fit, etc. So it can be a huge time saver. But what I would always very much recommend is to work very closely in partnership with a recruitment agency if you choose to work with one, because you need to really help them to understand what you're looking for, the context of the role, and also very much everything that cannot be on a job description, but is really, really important to know to find the right person, particularly for such a pivotal role.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. There's so much to think through, isn't there?
It really, really is. And you know, I mentioned earlier the buzzword employer branding, and it throws it out. And I think charities quite often are actually not aware of all the assets that they have when it comes to recruiting great candidates. So employer branding is actually essentially presenting and promoting your organization as a great place to work and where candidates want to work. So it includes range from the reputation of the organization to the work environment, values and benefits. And with benefits, I'm not talking about the monetary benefits. Yes, they are important as well, but we all know it's very hard for a charity to compare with the private sector. So we can talk about all the opportunities that you can do to sell what you have, whether that is your professional and the possibility for professional and personal growth, or the opportunity to break new ground, a positive collaborative work culture. It's about, and I should have started off with that because that's actually the key aspect, the ability to make a positive change and improve lives, to make a difference, to work somewhere where you are not selling just a product and work for shareholders. So I should have started off with that because that's a really, really, really important part. And when it comes to the monetary benefits, when I said earlier they can't compare, a lot of charities actually have benefits that money can't buy, and they're really attractive to candidates. And that's flexibility. And when I talk about flexibility, I don't just mean hybrid, because that's almost a must have these days. Almost all organizations offer hybrid working. But actually being even more flexible, working more flexible hours, possibility to work condensed hours, perhaps even work completely remotely, etc. So it's just being able to think wider and see yourself as an organization that can offer a fantastic workplace, that can offer a fantastic set of benefits as well, which go far beyond the salary at the end of the month. And I think as a last thing to perhaps bring in, it also means how do charities sell themselves to organizations, to candidates. And charities, when I look at job description, charities often have them like a long list of tasks. And I know they need to include a lot of detail, but if you can start thinking of them more as a sales document, basically selling, bringing the organization to life, bringing the job to life, bringing the opportunity to life, then you're selling your organization in a way which makes it stand out in that competitive market. So it actually is much more winning and appealing than many other private sector companies may be. But that's a big part of the employer brand. Kind of how do you come across? How do you bring that to life? But again, that obviously needs to be consistent across all touch points. That needs to work throughout the application process. Charity sector can have a very lengthy application process, very lengthy application forms or cover letters, while the private sector very often just works on a CV basis. So the question is, what do you need to do? Can you review it? What works better? How can you make it work to be so you can get through to the audience, to the pool of candidates you want to engage with? And then just be probably as natural as possible, as fun as possible. A lot of interviews in the not-for-profit sector are very structured. You can face an overwhelming panel of people and can be quite lengthy as well. And again, that's something that people, particularly when they come from other sectors, may not be familiar with, and they may just say, oh, may almost put them off before you hook them in. And I think that's something to remember. Recruitment goes both ways. You're recruiting for a candidate. You're meeting a candidate, but they're also meeting you. So it's about selling yourself and showing them the opportunity and all the positive aspects of working in your organization, working in your charity.
I think that's such a good point, because I'd love to see more charity digital team and digital lead job descriptions where there's that really strong focus on the why and the how in the job description, rather than exactly as you say, a list of tasks. We often see that as well. So I think that's great, and that will inspire and bring the right people to you.
Exactly. The word inspiration, that's exactly what it is. And particularly on a senior level, that is something that is an absolute must have, because they come in, they want to be inspired, but they will also, their job is also to inspire the organization to move into that direction. So inspiration is a very big part of it on both sides, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gosh, we could speak for ages about it, couldn't we? Is there anything in terms of the building the teams, building digital teams, that you'd like to mention but we haven't covered yet?
I think the main thing I'd say is to really think about the role of the digital team as a change agent. So sometimes I have seen situations where charities have hired really good doers, you know, really good digital doers as part of their team, but actually they have some great people in there who could also be activated as change agents and really look at how they can encourage the rest of the organization to do more digitally as well. So that's the one thing that I would recommend in addition to what we've talked about.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. And that goes into the overall change in change management world that we touched on earlier. That's a very good point. Gosh, we've covered a lot, haven't we? And it feels we only scratched the surface, haven't we? We started off with some insight that you shared from the Charity Digital Skills Report and the key challenges. And it was very interesting when you mentioned how budgets can be really stifling, but also the lack of strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's so important to be able to know what you actually need to go forward, needing the sponsorship. You just mentioned, and I thought that was very good when you said make the digital team change agents as well, in that sense. And I think we also touched briefly on what to keep in mind, what to think of when you're recruiting for a highly specialized role, and how to sell yourself, make yourself the great place, make sure people know you are the great place. You are where someone wants to work, where someone wants to come on board, and is inspired to make such a change. Have I missed out on anything, Zoe?
No, I think that's absolutely perfect.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Zoe. As I said, I really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope we can do it again soon. I think we probably could have chatted for ages, so for further hours. So thank you very much for joining me, and hopefully speak soon again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. This has been really fun.